You may be seated. Well, how many times have you heard this passage from Luke, today's gospel reading? And whether it's the first time or the 100th time, you might find yourself shaking your head as I do, hearing all that Jesus is asking of his listeners, and you might wonder, how can I possibly do all that? It's just too hard. Is Jesus being realistic in what he's asking his followers? After all, we are human. Well, in those verses, I made a list, 17 different do's and don'ts. And there were only three of those were repeats. Love your enemies. Ooh, that's a hard one. Do good, especially to those who hate you. And then there's the idea of giving. Give more to those who would take your clothing. Give to the beggar. Give even and especially to the one who is not able to reciprocate and give back. Among the behaviors on this list is that well-known golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, there are some cynics who would say, do unto others before they do unto you. There are two other big ones that get my attention, and that's the command to forgive and also to be merciful. Things that Jesus would have us do as his disciples. Well, I made another list. My list wasn't quite as positive as Rachel's, because mine came from some of the recent news headlines from the Washington Post. There were stories of perceived abuses of presidential power in the United States and reports of those who are victims of his policies, such as asylum seekers. There was a story about how at the Venezuelan border, relief supplies are still just sitting there, unable to reach those who are needed, because those supplies have been blockaded by their president, Maduro, because they come from countries who want him to step down as president. And then there's the Coast Guard lieutenant who's being held as a suspect for plotting widespread terrorist attacks. There are the possible false claims by Jussie Smollett of hate crimes, false claims that he may have made in hopes of bolstering his acting career. But on the other hand, if you are to believe what Smollett says, the crimes and the messages of hate are certainly not very palatable either, are they? Downright despicable. There are even more reports of clergy sexual abuse in the Roman Catholic Church, as Pope Francis begins his landmark Vatican summit on that matter. And it's not just the Catholic Church that has the problem, folks. There are charges of racism in the Virginia governor's mansion and among other prominent leaders. There are the sexual assault allegations against Virginia's lieutenant governor. There are the charges of solicitation for prostitution against New England Patriots football team owner Robert Kraft, a man who is said to be one of NFL's most influential figures. And complicating this particular story is the investigation into the international sex trafficking practices by the owners of that business that Mr. Kraft patronized. For me, the most disheartening are the accounts of the abuses of power by those in positions that we've come to trust and respect. And these are just a few of the stories. I don't feel like I need to go on. I'm certainly uncomfortable enough. uncomfortable enough to lament and to ask, come on, Jesus, how can I possibly love those people? How do I forgive? How can I do good to those who abuse so many others, who flagrantly misuse their power and position? How can I offer a blessing to those people? Well, I can certainly relate to Denise Anderson's reflections on the lectionary, as published in the January 30th issue of Christian Century magazine. She writes in part that Christians have often encouraged people to be silent about their pain, using the Bible as our justification. Texts such as these have been employed to silence the victimized so that others are not discomfited or inconvenienced by their difficult stories. We have used Jesus' words to actively encourage vulnerable people to stay in abusive environments and relationships. And in this way, we have led people to their own slaughter. They've even done so in the name of Christ. I think of slavery as one example. Anderson continues, as a minister who works to cultivate racial justice in the church and the world, the most frequent pushback I receive involves questions about forgiveness and not harping on the past. To these kind and well-meaning detractors, the most appropriate Christian thing to do is either to forget the past or find something redeeming about it. In either case, any mention of present pain is an indication of some sort of lingering animosity over something that happened long ago, but we presume isn't happening today. And she says that it remains for me the saddest of ironies that so many Christians would see someone else die in their pain rather than die to their own indifference or their need to feel secure in the world's rightness. It's the misuse of the text rather than outright hostility from avowed enemies that presents the biggest threat to the church's ability to truly embrace its call to justice and genuine brotherhood and sisterhood. But there's another reason these texts bother me, says Anderson. And this is where I can really relate as well, because these texts challenge me. First of all, I like to see the world as rosy. But we also look at that I don't want to give more of myself to people who are already taking so much. Those familiar with the sting of a slap aren't very quick to submit to it. In other words, if I've been slapped, what's my first normal inclination? To strike back, isn't it? I fight with the text, she says, because I want to know why it asks so much more from the victimized than from the victimizer. I'm also reminded that being a victim does not strip me of all power. Even at the receiving end of someone's bad behavior, I can control my own response. What offends us, however, and why the text challenges us so much, what makes Jesus' gospel so scandalous, so difficult, so nonsensical at times, is that it does, in truth, challenge our own inclinations. Oh, yes. And I'm often the person who's actually delivering the slap or the strike on the first cheek. I'm actually the person who has to put myself at the mercy of the victim and wonder, how's that person going to respond? If I strike you, Are you going to come back at me? Sometimes I'm the one that Jesus is talking about here. I'm not the one he's asking to offer the forgiveness. I'm the one he's saying, forgive me. Anderson continues. We may be tempted to place ourselves only in the role of the one who was slapped or betrayed. But what if we ourselves assume that we are the slapper, the thief, the opportunist who takes away and takes advantage of the vulnerable person? The truth is, we often are, and we don't like to admit that. We like to view ourselves and our place in the world that we're the good ones. We're the ones who live to make things better. Until we're not those people. Until we're proven otherwise. It seems to me that part of the good news in these texts today is their suggestion, and you hear it most of all in the lesson from 1 Corinthians, the suggestion that there's some sort of death necessary for the reign of God to take place. The Apostle Paul uses that kind of language very freely. Certainly in this extended 15th chapter from 1 Corinthians, and we've heard just part of that today. Even earlier, we hear Paul when he talks about when we are baptized not only into Christ's life, but into a death, into a kind of death where we drown the old us, our old selves, as Martin Luther would say, and a new person comes about. And Paul continued, calls this new death, or this death and this new resurrection, certainly what he says is of the first importance to him, that Christ died, but Christ was also risen. And if we have died in a death like his, we shall also be resurrected in a new life like his. If Christ is raised from the dead, then we can be raised from the dead. And we don't have to wait until this physical body goes away. We can have new life now if we're willing to change some of our traditional ways of thinking. If we're willing to do as our brothers and sisters have done this week here in this congregation, have served the homeless by being part of the Watts shelter event. When we're willing to look beyond the circumstances and say, and put ourselves in their position, we know what it's like to be hungry. We know what it's like to be cold and tired. And maybe we don't have a bed handy or a comfortable place to rest. When we put ourselves in that position and say, yes, we too can reach out. We can offer a hand rather than saying, what put you in that circumstance? It doesn't matter. We've put a human face on that. Jesus asks us to put a human face on our abuser, on our enemy, on the one with whom we disagree. So really, the gospel that we hear this day comes to us as we remember that Christ has in fact died for us, that Jesus did die on the cross, that Jesus in his humanness could even look and ask questions that we say almost and say, God, what did you have in mind? Why have you forsaken me? a Jesus who can, from the cross, ask God to forgive those, for these people who have crucified him don't really know what they're doing. I may have forgiven, but I can still remember vividly one night, probably about 20 years ago now. I was a seminary student at the time. I got really, really angry with my husband, John. On that occasion, I felt particularly betrayed and wronged about something he had done. And as I stormed out of the house that evening, I remember just screaming at him at the top of my lungs, "I am so mad at you. I'm so angry. I still love you, but I am furious right now. And I'm going to leave for a while so I can clear my head." So I did. I stormed out of the house, car keys in hand. I drove away someplace, probably to Starbucks, I think it was. Sat down and drank some coffee for a while. And as I look back, I realize it was only God that gave me the courage that day to say, "I love you," and to get away for a time so I could diffuse that situation. When I got back home, I still didn't want to talk to John. In fact, I thought about sleeping on the sofa that night, but by golly, I wasn't going to let him keep me from sleeping in my comfortable bed, way over on my side, mind you, but I slept in my own bed. And by God's grace, John and I managed to get through that crisis. There were other times, I don't remember them being quite so serious. And truth be told, if John were still alive, he might tell you otherwise. And that it was God's grace that empowered him to love and forgive me for those times when I wronged and betrayed him. God's inviting us to a new way of looking at life, to check out those milestones that Rachel mentioned, and to give thanks for the goodness in our lives, to find ways that we can love and serve our neighbor, to be transformed. In this season, may we also find the courage to lose our lives to Christ, so that we may truly find them again. In Jesus' name.